You're listening to Voices of Your Village. This is episode 167. Today I got to hang out with our sleep consultant, Kristen Young. We dove into the signs that your child is ready to drop a nap. Naps are a topic that we get so many questions about, especially under 18 months, because everything changes so fast. You know, just when you feel like you've gotten it nailed down, you're like, yes, we figured it out. They're shifting and they're showing you they're ready to drop a nap and there's a change and it can just all feel really overwhelming. So Kristen and I hung out to outline this for you. How do you know when your kiddo is ready to drop a nap? If you want our ultimate guide to naps, head on over to sedenso.org/sleep-courses and snag the sleep course that works best for your kiddo's age, and we will send you our ultimate nap guide. If you purchase the course between now and April 18th, we'll send you over that guide totally for free as a bonus. Head on over to sedenso.org/sleep-courses. All right, folks, let's dive in. Welcome to Voices of Your Village, a place where parents, caregivers, teachers, and experts come to support one another on this wild ride of raising tiny humans. We combine decades of experience with the latest research to create the modern parenting village. Let's dive into honest conversation about real parenting challenges so it doesn't have to be this hard. I'm your host, sleep consultant, child development specialist, and passionate feminist, Alyssa Blass Campbell. Hey everyone, welcome back to Voices of Your Village. Today I get to hang out with our sleep consultant, Kristen. Kristen joined our team at the end of 2020. Kristen's been a part of the village for a while. And as our sleep program grew, it was nice to bring somebody in from the village who knows the ropes here and understands one thing that's really, I think, separate from our sleep programs is the focus on sensory systems. It's something that I found missing in a lot of other programs that plays such a huge role in sleep. So Kristen came on board with us, already having a bunch of knowledge around sensory systems, and we trained her and she's off to the races. And I'm excited for you guys to get to hear from her. Today we're going to chat about nap transitions and how you know that a kid is ready to drop a nap. We'll be focusing largely here in that first 18 months. It's generally when we are seeing all this happen. And I feel like it's one of those things, Kristen, where like it changes so fast.
Yeah, it feels like as soon as you get used to one routine and set schedule, then they're ready to move on to the next one.
Totally. Totally. Kristen, can you share a bit about kind of who you are in your family unit?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm a mom to two boys. My oldest is 4.5 and my youngest is 2.5. And we're actually expecting our third and final child in September. And yeah, I really became super interested in sleep when we had some struggles with our oldest and I was pregnant with my youngest. And I just totally feel for parents because there's nothing like being sleep deprived and feeling like there's so many different options and answers out there on Google. And really, it can just be so helpful to have a person to talk to help guide you through the decisions of how to help your babe get good sleep.
Yeah, totally. And I think that it's one of those things where often there are these one size fits all programs, right?
Yes.
Where it's like, we're doing it this way or we're doing it this way. And we aren't one size fits all humans.
No. And you know what I loved about the SEED program too, is like, we did use a sleep consultant and they were awesome. And like, we were able to get great sleep for Avery, but I never remember even learning about wake windows or sleep pressure, which is like the game changer, until I discovered SEED on Instagram and you and I got to chatting, and that literally set Smith up for success. And he's been an amazing sleeper since he was like 4 or 5 months old. Knowing that information is just huge. And yeah. I can't believe more people don't know about it.
Totally. Well, I think so often we treat behavior of sleep.
Definitely.
Like, you know,
what's
like
the reason for this? Yeah.
Yeah. And then we're like, how do we respond to the cries? And we're so focused on the behavior. And I'm just, as a human, I'm like a I'm not a band-aid on a bullet hole kind of gal. Like, I'm a root of the problem kind of person.
Same.
And yeah, so that just like never has felt good to me in general in behavior with kids, whether it's in sleep or in everyday life. I want to know like, oh, what's going on here? So when we're looking at naps, I want to look at like, how do we know what's going on here? Because like we said, it changes so much so fast, right? They come out of the womb and their sleep is vastly different in 6 months, in 9 months, in a year from then. Mm-hmm. And right when you feel like you've got a grip on something, it can be like, oh, and it's changing.
Yeah, definitely. And it can be really discouraging to parents who, especially I remember in that like 3 month time when like they, I like to say they trick you and they start sleeping like long chunks at night. And you feel like you're getting this routine of maybe some sort of like 4 or 5 regular-ish naps. And then all of a sudden they turn 4 months and the circadian rhythm kicks in and you're like, wait, what was happening here? And then that chaos only lasts for a couple of months until they get into like the solid 2-nap schedule. And it's just like I said earlier, every time you think you have it under control in those first 18 months, something is just always changing. And when you set out with that expectation, I think it's a lot easier to manage. It's still hard to, you know, go with less sleep than you're used to, but knowing that, okay, this period of time is going to be temporary and it's going to change and we're going to adapt and everything's going to be okay. I think that helps make it a lot easier. And I don't think parents are set up with that in the beginning to know that, you know?
Absolutely. I think that's so true. We're so focused on like, how's the baby sleeping? Do they have a schedule? Do they have a routine? And the reality is that schedule and routine might be changing so much that, yeah, I agree. I don't think folks are set up with that idea of like, this is temporary. And one thing that I love about our programs and that for me feels so important about them is that you have access to our courses for a chunk of time and access to our private group to continue to ask questions. You were just saying you had a consultation this week where this family had come in and they had like created a plan and it worked really well for their kiddo. And now it's a few weeks later and all of a sudden he's showing signs of wanting to drop a nap and what was working before isn't working. And it's important to me that we provide a program where folks can pop right back in for free and just say like, hey, what we did before is no longer working and I need help troubleshooting this. And be able to ask those questions because there are so many changes. I think especially in that like 5 to 23 month window, which is our most popular course, not shocking because there's so many changes there. I think it makes sense to have help. So when you looked at say like this kiddo this week, what were some things that you saw that you were like, ooh, I think he might be ready to go from those 3 naps down to 2?
Yeah. So this kiddo was doing really well. This family started some sleep interventions a couple of weeks ago. We had a call with them and like walked them through what steps they wanted to take as a family to help their kiddo get some independent falling asleep happening. And so they were doing that for a couple of weeks and having some really nice solid chunks of like 5-6 hours. This is a nursing babe. So they were sleeping for like 5-6 hours at the beginning of the night and then waking up to nurse. But then all of a sudden that just stopped. And simultaneously, they were having a really hard time getting that third cat nap in. Either it was happening like way too late and they need to cut it at like 10, 15 minutes. Or, you know, they also noticed that naps throughout the day were getting kind of short because timing was all off. Like in the morning, he wasn't quite ready to nap at his normal time because he's ready to extend his wake windows and have longer chunks. So we started seeing shorter naps. Having a really hard time getting that last nap in, and then falling asleep at bedtime was hard. And we noticed, or they noticed, that their babe was waking up, you know, every couple of hours because they were maybe tired enough to fall asleep, but they didn't have enough sleep pressure build up to stay asleep.
Yeah, that's so helpful. I think identifying those things as like, these are things you might see as kind of like warning signs. And it's tough because that cat nap at the end of the day, when they're on 3 naps, so generally around like 5-ish months, and some kiddos will hold on to 3 naps up to 8 months. Some kiddos are ready for 2 naps closer to 6 months. And it's hard to know but that last cat nap is one of those where rarely will they take it like in a crib or in a sleep space off of a human body. It's usually one of those where we're like, get it where you can get it.
Yeah. It's usually a nap that's difficult to get anyway. So it can be confusing to parents. So we like to say, try to notice a pattern. Is this something that you're seeing more resistance than usual? Or the way that that second nap happens and it extends, that by the time you'd be able to fit a cat nap in, it would mess up bedtime. Like, those are some signs that you're probably ready to drop it.
Yeah, I love it. I think that's so helpful.
We also suggest to parents that, like, if you feel like maybe they're ready to try dropping a nap, you can try it for a couple of days and see how they respond at night. Usually 3 or 4 days, you should notice some sort of improvement. And if you haven't, then you definitely can hop back to the schedule you were on before. And maybe there's some sleep pressure adjusting that needs to happen or something else that you need to look at to see what's causing the disruptions at nighttime.
Yeah, I think it's so important to note that flexibility that, like, once you make a change, it doesn't mean you have to stick with that.
We were talking about that actually on the call this week. They were like, well, what happens if, you know, we try to extend the morning wait time and then that nap is kind of short and then the second nap falls short? What do? Do we move bedtime up by like a couple hours? We're like, don't worry. For the next couple of weeks, as your babe is adjusting, it's okay if some days there's 3 naps and some days there's 2. You just want to be consistent in trying to make 2 work. And if there's a day that you need to pop one in so you can make it to bedtime, then you do what you have to do. It can take like 7 to 20 days for them to adjust fully to a new schedule.
Totally. And you brought up something that I think is really important to note there, that the amount of time that they're asleep, like that length of the nap, is not as important as the amount of time that they're awake. Can you speak to that a bit there, as people who might be making these transitions or trying out, like, is my kiddo ready to drop that nap?
Yeah. So sometimes people are hung up on like, oh, I need my kid to have this like 2-hour nap in the morning, 2-hour nap in the afternoon, and then we have so much time before bedtime. And some kids just have less sleep needs. As long as you're following the wake windows and your kid's not getting overtired, then you can have success. So if you're able to match your schedule to kind of align with that 2 hours-ish awake in the morning before the first nap, 3 hours awake-ish after that first nap before the second, and then we can usually see about 4 hours when we're on that 2-nap schedule, that can be really helpful. It doesn't matter how long the naps are, as long as you're able to fit your babe's schedule to accommodate those wake windows.
Yeah, totally. And I think that that for me, like, is such a relief with the flexibility of like, okay, that means that if we have something going on, or if a kiddo has like 2 really rough naps for the day, I can mm-hmm. squeeze a cat nap in to protect, so that they're not awake for too long, protect that bedtime. Totally. And then that's okay. You know, that like, it doesn't have to be like every day they're on 2 naps. They can sometimes be on 3, as long as we're paying attention to how long they are awake rather than how long they sleep.
And that also means that you aren't like change to this nap at 10, nap at 1. Like, it can be flexible.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Tiny human sleep can feel like such a doozy to figure out. Maybe your first kid was totally different than your second kid, or you've hit Google and found such conflicting advice. We've got your back. Over at Seed, we have sleep courses for newborns, 5 to 23 month olds, and 2 to 5 year olds. We broke them up into different ages and stages so that we can support you with developmentally appropriate ways to help your tiny human get optimal sleep. This is a shame-free, judgment-free space where we have folks who are navigating sleep in all different ways. It is not one size fits all. Your child is unique and your family unit is unique. Everybody's going to have unique sensory profiles and different sleep needs. Our sleep courses guide you through creating a plan unique to your child. We look at the foundational skills, take a look at biology and what's going on beneath the surface so that your tiny human can get restorative sleep, which is huge for immune function and emotional development, for regulation and the ability to thrive throughout the day. You don't have to do this alone. We're here to support you. And if you snag one of our sleep courses right now, between now and Sunday, April 18th, you get access to our ultimate guide to addressing nap challenges, a bonus that's only available right now. You also get entered in to win the chance to get your biggest sleep question answered by our sleep team. You'll get a 5-minute voice memo with your answer. Head on over to seedandsew.org/sleep-courses to find the course that's right for your child's age group and get in on these bonuses now. seedandsew.org/sleep-courses. You do not have to do this alone.
I actually remember when I was just a villager reaching out to you, we were in like a travel situation or something. I think we went to visit in-laws. This was pre-pandemic. And my son was still on a 2-nap schedule, I think. But the way that things had gone, as it always does, is we had planned for travel during nap time and the nap in the car was too short. And I didn't want to have to put him to bed way too early and miss out on time with his cousins. And I figured there's no way he's going to go to sleep anyway with all that excitement. And you told me to put him to bed like when it would be his bedtime based on wake windows, but just let him sleep for like 15 minutes. So I did that, woke him up, and then put him down to bed at his normal bedtime, and he slept fine. He just needed a little bit of help to make it to bedtime, just to kind of shorten that that break in his bank where he wasn't going to make it otherwise. He needed something to just add some sleep to his tank to make it to bed. And that was so successful. So it's nice for parents to know that they have those options to be flexible.
Yeah, it is so helpful. It's so comforting. Yeah. And because like what works maybe for a first kid when you might have way more flexibility in your schedule, like that might not be the same schedule you mm-hmm. have for a second kid. And you might not be able to, you might feel nap trapped, yeah. you know? And so like having that flexibility of, less importantly is the length of the nap and more importantly is the length of awake time and being mindful of that, I think is so comforting. So we're looking at this dropping of a nap. We've talked about there that the like 3 to 2 naps, which generally falls between 6 and 8 months for kiddos, that most kiddos by the time they're 8 months have moved to 2 naps. And
I feel like such a great transition too, because I remember personally, like the newborn stage to me is not that hard. They're falling asleep like whenever they want. You can kind of be on the go. But then when they're on that 3-nap schedule, it's a little bit trickier to try to manage. You feel like you're kind of relegated to watching their wake windows and it can be so unpredictable. But then when they do settle into that 2-nap schedule, it is a little bit more predictable. It is typically around the same times each day, especially if you wake your kid at the same time. That's one thing that we do recommend that can help maintain those wake windows at similar times, just for predictability. But again, you have flexibility there. Totally. So yeah, I definitely felt like dropping to 2 naps was such a relief. And then when you drop down to 1, that's even easier. You just have one great nap that you look forward to.
Totally. And that's the like, oh, it's such a mindset shift. When I was teaching infants, I had a classroom of 7 babies and my oldest, I can so vividly remember all my kids were on a 2-nap schedule and they were all older infants at this point. And my oldest had like was entering into like young toddlerhood and mm-hmm. putting them all down for their 9 o'clock nap, which for me was like, oh, I got to like breathe and have coffee and recharge for a minute. And then I knew like we'd be up for about 3 hours and I'd get another little break. And I like loved that two nap schedule so much. And I remember putting my oldest in the crib and her just standing there and say, no nap. And she would literally just say, no nap, standing and looking at me and me being like, no.
And that's the thing about kids is some of them tell you they're ready right away. Just like this baby that we had in the call, they're showing signs. Others, you might be getting to that end of the range and you need to do some active work to get them to move on from those naps. Maybe because it is affecting nighttime sleep and they're not showing really that they're ready during the day. Sometimes you have to kind of force that on them. Yeah. So it can be hard. You really just have to get to know your kid and what they need.
That's a good note that sometimes you won't see it during the day, but you will see it at night. That sometimes maybe during the day they're holding steadfast to those naps, but it's really messing with nighttime. Actually, my best friend recently reached out and she has a kiddo who is on that younger end of the spectrum, like dropped down to two naps younger than most, like it, and now is just turning one. Or just turned one, and her naps during the day were fine. What we were seeing was overnight. She was like, she is just like up. She had been sleeping through the night. Like, what is going on? And so we looked at development a little bit and like troubleshot some other things. And then was like, you know what? She was on the earlier end of the spectrum for dropping to two naps. I wonder if she's ready. And they just dropped down to one. They just dropped it down and consolidated it for her nap wise. And I just got a message from her husband yesterday that was like, oh my gosh, we're sleeping through the night again. Like, but like the overnights is where we might see it and we might not see it during the day. And so when we're dropping down to one nap from, and they're not showing those signs, like the little girl standing in the crib with nap resistance at 9 a.m., it's easy for me to push her nap because she's not asking for one, you know?
Right.
But when they're not doing that independently, how are some ways that we can kind of pull that together so that we don't have an overtired babe either?
Totally. Yeah. What I can say too is this just happened with Smith, my son, who's 2.5, and he's been solidly on one nap for a while. And I don't plan to get rid of it until he's totally showing me that he is done with the nap. But we notice we are on like such a late schedule now because of pandemic. Like my kids don't go to bed till like 9:30, but they sleep till like 8:39. It's wonderful. I'm not complaining at all. But everything has shifted. And so he was going down for a nap around 2 and sleeping until 4, which was working awesome for him for the longest time. And then all of a sudden we started seeing like he was fighting going to bed at 9:30 a little bit. We're like, we cannot push this kid's bedtime to 10 o'clock. Like we have to work. He's home and can wake up whenever he wants with the sitter, but we have got to get things on track. So he was resisting bedtime a little bit. And then we'd notice after like 2 hours, he'd be awake. And then like 2 hours later, he'd be awake again. And so instead of dropping the nap, we just cap it now. So sometimes it's just as much as all you need to do is just look at the length of a nap too, because sometimes they still need the nap, but it could be too long and too much sleep can interfere with nighttime sleep as well. So that's something that you can look out for too. Even when they are on a 2-nap or a 3-nap schedule, sometimes you might need to be capping naps if they still do need those naps at those times to maintain sleep pressure and not get overtired. You can look at capping naps as well.
Yeah, that's really helpful to note for sure. I think especially for those one nappers, we see that where it's like, oh, they're ready to drop the nap. And often we'll see folks drop a nap too soon when really we just needed to shorten.
Right. And like, he could have gone. Like sometimes if we weren't paying attention, it'd be like 4:15, 4:30. We'd go and he'd be sound asleep. Like he could have slept for 3 hours if we let him, but he didn't need it for overnight sleep and it was affecting overnight sleep, which is definitely way more restorative and important. So we just experimented with seeing what worked and shortening that daytime nap is what helped. And he's been doing awesome since. So I like to recommend that to parents too, if they feel like, especially in the later toddler years when they still do kind of need that nap, but it seems like things are going off the rails. They're like, is it time to drop? My kid's so young. Like, totally. No, try shortening first before you see if they need to get rid of it entirely.
Yeah, we see this a lot with kids in childcare too, as they enter into the preschool years. A lot of childcare programs have naps way too late for most families.
Oh my gosh, that happened with my oldest also. I don't think they started the nap until like 1 p.m.
Yeah. And
this was pre-pandemic. So we were all on like a 7:30 bedtime kind of thing. And he just was not tired.
Yeah.
But then you push things back and then it doesn't align with when you have to have wake time. So that can be a really tricky situation. I know really a lot tricky. Of kids have success like asking daycare to cap the nap if they have to allow the kid to sleep at all.
Yeah. And like a lot of those kids still need a nap. But for me, that was really my push too, was like, all right, if childcare isn't going to move the nap earlier, a lot of them are 1 to 3. And I get it.
Yeah,
I get it. I taught preschool. Like it, so much of our schedule is, it's really set in stone and who's covering breaks and when we as teachers get lunches and all that factors into when nap time is. It's a whole system.
Yep. And his had like AM and a PM program. So by the time AM left, that's when they were taking a nap, was like at 1 o'clock. Yeah, totally get it.
Yeah. And so there might not be a whole lot of flexibility with childcare, but one of the things when you're seeing a kiddo who is maybe taking that 1 to 3 nap at school and then they're resisting bedtime is to be able to just cap it, even if they get an hour or even just a half hour at school. The teacher isn't going to love it because they're going to be waking up a kid, which is not a fan favorite thing to do, but it'll protect your overnights.
Mm-hmm. And they can still, I know at my son's preschool, he was able to like wake up as long as it took him to wake up, and he'd snuggle with his stuffy and look at some books quietly. And then there was also plenty of kids in the room who were way beyond needing a nap and they would just be on their mat quietly. So I think if you just have to have that conversation with your daycare, they can be understanding. They don't always have a lot of room, but as far as like capping a nap and giving an option for a quiet time, a lot of times they do have wiggle room there.
Totally. All right. So when we're looking at dropping these naps, we've talked about maybe nap resistance that we would see, like the little girl in my room who's standing up, or that third nap where they're resisting it. Generally, I see it in either that first nap or the last nap of the day.
Yes.
Where you'll see that resistance. And we talked about potentially seeing it in overnights where we're seeing a lot of wake ups, even though it seems like nothing else has changed.
Yes. So a lot of times you can see resistance at bedtime when a kid was typically going down without a problem, sleeping independently. They had no problem. You'd be like, I love you. Good night. And things would be going smoothly. And then all of a sudden they're fighting. It's taking them 40, 50, 60 minutes to fall asleep when normally it takes them like 15 to 20. That can be a huge sign that they just have too much sleep in their tank and they are probably ready to drop one of those naps or shorten naps.
Yeah. And I like to think of this, like if you were an adult and you weren't really that tired and somebody was like, and fall asleep, and you're like, okay, but I can't. And like, just like the pressure of that, of like, no, fall asleep now. And now I'm going to watch you on a monitor and see if you're asleep.
Yep.
Come in and check on you. Yep. And just like,
think about those times. You ever just like, I'm sure right now being pregnant, you lay down just to rest and then you fall asleep. And then it's bedtime. You're like, come on, I can't fall asleep. Like that's what's happening to our kids when they're having naps that they don't need anymore, is they might feel tired and they'll fall asleep for that nap. But then when it goes to be bedtime, they're wide awake, or they might fall asleep for a little bit and then wake up after that first sleep cycle and have a hard time sinking to the next one because they really just took bedtime as a little cat nap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. It's funny, although like right now, so we're recording this obviously before it's airing, but we're batching out these episodes, but I'm currently 37 weeks pregnant. And now I feel like I could fall asleep at any time and still go to bed at night because I'm so tired.
I feel like first trimester and third trimester is like, you can sleep whenever you want and it's still never enough.
Totally. I was actually voice messaging with Rach the other day and I was laying on my living room floor, like stretching while we were voice messaging back and forth. And then all of a sudden I just like woke up in a puddle of my own drool. Zach came in, he had just like cleaned up dinner dishes.
Like, are you okay?
He came in and was like, are you asleep? And I was like, I was, this is true. I was stretching and talking to Rach, but nope, then I was asleep. But that is not how it works for tiny humans. Okay, so we have bedtime resistance, nap time resistance, bedtime overnights. One more thing that I don't think is often associated with this, but can be, is that early morning wake starting to happen.
Yes. Oh my gosh. This is actually what got us kickstarted with needing a sleep consultant with our oldest. We had all those other troubles as well, but the early mornings was just so brutal. In my daytime life, I'm an elementary school art teacher. And so when Avery was having his biggest sleep troubles, I was in my first trimester of pregnancy with my second. working at a really difficult school. I had to be there super early. And those like 4 or 5 a.m. wake ups were absolute torture. There was nothing we could do to get him to go back to sleep. I mean, eventually we figured it out once we learned about sleep pressure and things like that, how to answer and respond to him consistently. But I was just like, I can't survive this. I don't know what to do. There's something about when they wake up between like 1 and 3 that feels a little bit more manageable to me. But when it's like those early mornings and then you yourself, you don't have time to go back to sleep. You're like, I might as well just get up and start my day. Ugh, I feel for parents that are stuck in that early wake up cycle.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
It's so rough.
It's so hard.
Yeah, I was just chatting with Erica, who's on our team, and her little one had this morning woke up at 4:30, and she was just like, all I said to her was, this is not morning time. And she's like, that's literally what my body felt, was just like, no, uh-huh. I know it feels like morning time for you, Tiny. Yep. This is not morning time. And I think that's how it feels for us. We're like, no, like there's always, I think for depending on your cultural context or your family unit schedule, there's a time on the clock that for you feels like this is morning time. I can accept this as morning, even though like, you know, you might not be sleeping in, but like, I can accept this time. And then any time before that, you're like, this is not going to work for me.
And like you said, there's sleep is not one size fits all. My husband can totally manage on like 6 or 7 hours. I need 9 hours of sleep. Do I ever get that anymore? Having 2 young kids? Hardly ever. But like anytime before 7 to me doesn't feel like it's okay to wake up. For some people, like they rise at 5 and they're just happy to do that. For most people, 4 a.m. is not that time. So when your kid is waking up at 4 a.m., that can be so hard. And you know what? Your babe doesn't want to be up that early either.
Yeah, it makes for a long, hard day. So when we're seeing those early morning wake ups, I think it's hard to connect like, oh, this could be naps. But can you talk about like why that could be naps? Kind of like what's happening throughout the day, potentially if kiddos are ready to drop a nap, but aren't resisting naps, or their nap schedule hasn't really changed throughout the day, but we are seeing that early morning wake up. How could those be connected?
Yeah. So those could be connected because like I mentioned before, you have a little tank, like we like to call. And when you have too much sleep, then when you're full and you've slept through the night, maybe 10, 11 hours, which is pretty typical for most kids, that could get you somewhere around 4 or 5 a.m. And then they're ready to go. They might not be super happy about it, but they have had enough sleep that they're able to be awake at that time. And that can really affect things, especially a lot of times we see when kids drop a nap, their bedtime adjusts a little bit because now they have a little bit of a longer wake window. So if you're still having quite an early bedtime, it's pretty typical when their sleep needs reduce that if they're going to bed at like 6:37, they might wake up at 5:30, 6, if you're not quite ready for them to be up at that time, because they've just had too much sleep. So that's something to be aware of too. If you're noticing like out of the blue morning wake ups, way early than you're used to. And there's nothing else going on. Like you have noise machine on, it's not light leaking through the windows, things like that.
Yeah, that's true. Like sometimes it's like summertime. People are like, why are they waking up? I'm like, well, we got to look at what's coming in the morning because that sun is now coming in. That's a shift here for us for sure in Vermont, where we go from like, we don't see the sun for so many months in the wintertime that it's almost like, oh, right, that exists.
And I even noticed that Smith slept in our bed last night, like I was telling you, and my room is way less dark than his room is. So he was up at 8 o'clock this morning. He usually doesn't wake up till 9. He's not a happy camper today, but there's just a lot more light leaking in here. So when he roused a little bit, he was like, oh, it's time to get up. And I was like, nope, it's not when you usually get up, but it can really make a difference.
Yeah. I also love that you've noted that his sleep schedule is like what I think for a lot of Americans here in the States, generally there's this message that actually drives me bonkers that you have to be on like a 7 to 6 or 7:30 to 6 and that there's a specific time. And I think it's so culturally ignorant. And
I remember thinking that. I remember any time that our kids were getting to bed past like 8, being like, oh my goodness, this is too late. And it is too late if your kid needs to be up at 6 or 7 or, you know, 5:30 or 6 or something because you have daycare needs or you need to get out of the house for work. Like that is too late then. But right now, like we're fortunate enough that we have a sitter in our house so he can wake up whenever he pleases.
Right.
And we have him wake up at 9 every day to maintain consistency. So his sleep pressure stays on point. But yeah, we just kind of shifted that way as both my husband and I were home during the pandemic. And then I'm a teacher, so it shifted right into summertime and it works out for us. So parents should know, like, if you don't have constraints because of your schedule and what time your kid needs to wake up in the morning, if a later bedtime works for you guys and you're maintaining those wake windows, then you don't need to feel like you're doing something wrong.
Totally. And we've worked over the years with a number of like medical professionals, doctors, or law enforcement folks who aren't on like a 9 to 5 during the day and want to be able to see their kids at different times. And I think it's really important to know. And I'm glad that you've just pointed out just that your kid's schedule is later because that's what works for your family unit. And that you noted that you then had to shift naps. Like it's not that because when they go to bed later, they're going to have to shift their whole schedule so we can maintain those wake windows, but that you can have different times there.
You know what, we actually, like, I don't think that we all need to be chained to our kids' schedules, but it is in everybody's best interest to try to maintain them as much as possible. And I actually work like right around the corner from my mom. I work at my alma mater. And so she watches my kids on Fridays and she suggests like, why don't you bring them up with you in the morning on Fridays? And I was like, well, if I did that, I'd have to wake the kids up 2 hours earlier. And if I do that one day, then I am going to have to adjust their schedule the rest of the week. And I'm just not willing to do that. So we go up on Thursday nights and sleep over. And the kids love that. But it's a minor adjustment that I had to make that I was able to make. But otherwise, really, like a 2 hour difference one day really would mean I'd have to adjust everything for the rest of the week.
It would really throw things off for sure.
Yeah.
And it just means, and as you said before, with like traveling or whatever, we can have flexibility with naps. And you do have to then adjust. We have to pay attention to those wake windows and be like, are they going to be awake too long here? Should we get a little cat nap in? Things like that. Yeah. All right. I feel like is there anything I'm missing for when we might see that they're ready to drop a nap?
No, I mean, what you said is kids are usually on like a 4 nap from 4 to 5 months till about 6 to 8 months. Again, it can vary from kiddo to kiddo. You might have your first kiddo that didn't drop until 8 months. And that could be because you were they only had your attention. And then maybe your second kiddo is ready to drop around 6 months because they're able to be a little bit more flexible. And then kids are usually dropping to 2 naps sometime around 6 to 8 months and hold on to that sometime between like 12 and 15 months. It can be later. It can be earlier. You just have to watch your kid. And then we typically see kids with 1 nap around like 12 to 15 months to like 3 years. Some kiddos hold on to a nap through 5 years. Mm-hmm. It just depends on what your kids need. Some kids in those preschool years do a nap like every couple of days.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's so helpful to note.
And I highly recommend when you do have those preschoolers rolling nap time right into quiet time. As soon as like you're making that transition, just adjust right to that so that that's a norm and a predictable routine. Because they do need that downtime, that sensory readjustment, that separation from you for a little bit, that time away from siblings if you're at home. It's really, really beneficial.
Yeah, a little sensory deprivation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Actually, when I first started teaching, I was in New York City, and the New York State law was that we had to have kiddos under five, had to have an hour of quiet time every day, even if they weren't sleeping, that like mm-hmm. it was required for us at school to make sure they had an hour of that downtime to just refill that sensory bank.
My oldest son, every day I've already been thinking about is when this new baby comes. Eventually Smith and Ave are going to share a room. And I'm like, Smith is still going to be napping, but Avery like thrives on quiet time. He loves it. He's a kid that can play independently all day long. He does play great with his brother, but he like thrives on getting his time. I'm like, how am I going to manage this? I'm going to have to like move Ave's quiet time somewhere, cause I know he loves it and he needs it. And he does it for an hour. Sometimes he'll go even longer. Like, can I still keep playing? I'm like, go for it, bud. Like whatever you want to do.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, that was something for sure at school too, for kiddos who have kiddos in childcare for these naps. Mm-hmm. For us, what I would do if folks are finding like their kids having a hard time with this, we created nap bags where like on their nap mat, they had, and it was the only time they got this bag. So it was kind of like a special thing, and it was all quiet things they could do. It was puzzles or maybe their favorite book, and they would help us fill their bags with what was going to be
awesome.
Yeah. And it was something that a lot of kids like really did look forward to.
Mm-hmm. Avery has all his Legos in his room, and it's like really a pain in the butt to take them out. So we have like one of those IKEA Trofasts with the drawers. So it really is something that he only gets to play in his room. And while he does play with them some other times throughout the day, like that's really his time to do that uninterrupted without a little brother, like wrecking mm-hmm. creations. Or he'll like bring some of his arts and crafts stuff up. He has a chalkboard wall. Like he just goes to town in there.
That's awesome. Such nice downtime for him. Yep. Well, if folks want more sleep support and feel like they need more guidance on this, we have a free sleep guide at so.org/sleep. And we have sleep courses available we break it up into different ages and stages so we can support you within your child's age or stage. Our goal is that if you were to get the 5 to 23 month course, you're set up with tools for success so that you aren't then having to buy the 2 to 5 year course. We actually used to do them all as one, and it was a higher cost. And so we broke them in half, those two age groups in half, so that we could drop the price and help you with more specifics for your age and stage. And that's at cedenso.org/sleep-courses. And right now until April 18th, if you snag that bad boy, we have a bonus for you all about naps. It's a complete guide to naps, and you're entered into win you can like reach out with your question and you'll get a voice memo back from our team. So that's happening right now from now until April 18th, if you snag one of our sleep courses.
I've already told all family and friends who do not have kids yet to expect to be given the newborn sleep course as a gift, because
what a gift.
Yeah, the foundations that are in there just help lay you out for or set you up for success.
Totally. And thank you. It's something we actually were getting so many requests for like, can I put this on my registry or can I get this as a gift card? So we did add, if you go to our like homepage right in the navigation bar, you can click gift cards and you could add a gift card to a registry. You could get it for somebody. And yeah, that's something we recently added because we had so many requests for that. I mean, what's better than the gift of sleep?
There's just so much misinformation out there, I think. And you mentioned something earlier about like, just the pressure of like, is my baby sleeping? And there's so much tied to like, are you being a good parent, quote unquote? If your baby is sleeping or not. And that has nothing to do with it. A lot of us just like didn't know that you shouldn't let your newborn be awake for more than 90 minutes and they're overtired and they're crying and you don't know how to help them. You think it's something you're doing. Is it my milk supply? Are they hungry? Mm-hmm. And just to have that invaluable information to know what to expect, to know what's normal, to know it's okay, to get that babe to sleep however you need to during those first couple months. And you just worry about making sure they're not overtired. That's it.
Totally.
Keep them alive, keep them fed.
Totally. There are no bad habits you can hold that newborn. In fact, that's like my favorite thing in the world. Mm-hmm. Snuggling that sleepy newborn. Rad. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. I'm so glad people get to get an insight into who you are, Kristen, here. I feel like you are a little behind the scenes here at Seed. So I'm glad people got to learn more about you. And yeah, if y'all snag courses, there's an option to add calls as well. But no matter what, you're entered into a private group where you get support from us. And Kristen is your gal in there. She's the gal who supports you in our private group and hops on a call with you if need be.
And there are so many other amazing parents who have been through all of this. I just see great advice from other moms and dads and caregivers in the Rested Parents group. It just, sometimes I go on to answer a question and another parent has already answered it. And I just say, oh, love this empathy, way to help each other out. It's so nice to have that village, especially when so many of us can't have people in person right now.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And to know that you're not alone in it.
No, you are not alone. So many other people have gone through the exact same struggle that you're going through right now.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks for hanging out with me, babe.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to Voices of Your Village. Check out the show notes for this episode and all past episodes at voicesofyourvillage.com. Did you know that we have a special community for all of you to be a part of so that we can all gather together to raise emotionally intelligent humans? Head on over to Facebook, search Seed and Sow : Voices of Your Village and dive into that Facebook group. We cannot wait to hang out with you and collaborate on raising these tiny humans. If you're digging this podcast, head on over to Apple Podcasts, scroll down, click those stars, and leave a review. It really fills my heart to hear from all of you.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests, too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.